don't we start a little sooner than soon? How about right there? Morning. We'll get the buttons figured out some millennium, something like that. Welcome to another round of soccer down here. Base is dropped, and we all know what we want to talk about this morning to various and sundry points and ends. So what I am going to do is I'm just going to let you guys go ahead and say what's on your mind. And Bart Keeler will be joining us at 9:30 to give his perspective on things, Bartimus Prime 19 on the Twitters. And it will be great to catch up with you, great to catch up with everybody and get your thoughts. Those of you who have already let me know what you're thinking on Twitter, please continue to do that as well. So it's at Soccer Down Here on Twitter, in the timeline, off to the edges when you're looking at comments here. Just like I said, just go ahead, lay them all out. It's all good. And we'll go through it. We'll go through it all this morning here for the next little while. Like I said, we'll lay it all out on the line. We'll talk it out and we'll talk it through. And, you know, we'll see where we go from here as Atlanta prepares for a road trip to Columbus on the weekend. So, I'm going to let you guys go ahead and lay out your comments. And like I said, we'll get into those as we go here this morning. But I want to start off with the morning kickoff. And yes, it has something to do with the match in and of itself. Brought to us by our friends at Kickoff Coffee, kickoffcoffeeco.com. And you can also reach out to them at Kickoff Coffee CO on Twitter, on Facebook, and on Instagram. Right here, over the shoulder. So that then the QR code, if you want me to turn it. So there's your QR code there as well. KickoffCoffeeCO.com, Kickoff Coffee on Twitter, on Facebook, and on Instagram. And I want to get to goal number two. Now, I know we'll talk about goal number one and what we completely and totally said you couldn't do happened again. So we'll get into goal number one as we go here this morning. I want to talk about goal number two and the idea that if Major League Soccer and their officials are to be taken seriously as a top 10 league worldwide, you cannot have moments like goal number two. You can't have that. You simply cannot have it. And what I mean is, for those of you that didn't watch the game and are just kind of tuning in, Atlanta United was down 1-0. And so a couple minutes later, after the goal from Lewis Morgan, there's a set piece. Patrick Klamala comes from an offside position, it looks like, jumps up in the air, goes over his head, past Rocco Rios Novo in the net, 2-0. He is initially ruled offside. Then the buzzer goes off from VAR Chris Penso, and they look at it, and they look at it, and they look at it, and they look at it. Did I mention that they look at it? The idea of a reversal, as I've understood it, is clear and obvious. And for those of you who were perhaps watching at home or in the building at Mercedes-Benz, we have four angles. And I assume that it's the same four angles that the center ref is looking at, four different ways that they can look at the play. And somehow, in those four angles, it was determined after a handful of minutes, you know, like 3.5 minutes, that one of those four angles yielded a clear and obvious error, which led to the reversal of the call and made it 2-0. So it goes from offside goal disallowed to goal and 2-0. If Major League Soccer is happy with moments like this, where you have 3.5 minutes where you're sitting there and reviewing something, and traditionally in any kind of a review, I think that it's safe to say that the longer a review takes, the more questions that you have and you're trying to talk yourself into a decision. That should not go down that way. It should not. It has to, if it's clear and obvious clear and obvious. That's the those are the key words here. It should be something that's viewed instantaneously and reversed just as quickly. Not something where you're sitting there and trying to look at something and massage an idea into a well, maybe the yeah, then okay. That to me is going to continue to hold, and instances like this, they're going to continue to hold Major League Soccer back when you have pro working their way through an idea and going, well, maybe we should reverse our thought here. No, it doesn't go that way. If the error is clear and obvious, and the only thing close, and like I said, this is close, you know, the angle on the slash of the four, I think it was the one that was low right, and it really doesn't give you the angle. The one from behind the net can't give it to you. The one at the slash that was closest to you is the closest to give you an idea, but still it's not there on the line where you can sit there and gauge and go, okay, this is something that is either high enough with an angle where I can look at it. It's not right there in line with it. So pro seems happy with what they have right now, and Major League Soccer seems happy with pro. But you cannot you can't be taken seriously if you continue to have moments like this. And for those of you who have Twitter accounts, here's how it was registered by VAR. MLS VAR is MLS Video Review, and and this is how they phrase themselves on Twitter. And I would recommend following them just to have another element to follow in these situations for context. 4,814 of you have already followed VAR. So see all video review outcomes from at MLS matches here. All tweets are automatically generated once outcomes are determined. So we go down. The goal not awarded to New York Red Bulls was reviewed for an offside by number 9, Patrick Klamala. After further review, the goal was awarded to New York Red Bulls because there was no offside. That is what MLS video review put out on Twitter after the decision was made. I'd like to know, did they have another angle that we didn't? Because if they did, I'd love to see it. From the stuff we got, I don't know where clear and obvious of a reversal came from. I honestly don't. And in the post-match press conference last night, I asked Gonzalo Pineda about the notion of goals changing games. He admitted goals change games. And with this second one, I think that the goals, you know, once again, goals change games. You can extrapolate this out all you want. That goal stays off the board. It's 1-0. Joseph puts the ball in the back of the net at 90 plus 4. It's 1-1. You end up with a point instead of zero. What kind of accountability will Pro have here? Doubtful any. But once again, you continue to have moments like this. Continue to have moments like this. And that's across the league. I'm just saying that I'm using this as it happened to Atlanta United last night, but it's not the only place it happens. So I'm not looking at things just in a specific – I'm looking at things in a specific prism, but I'm not looking at it specifically from the Atlanta United elements all the way through. It's not the only time that this has happened. It's not the only time it's happened to other clubs. And last night, apparently, there were other reviews that were questioned by fans across the board. So if pro is to be taken seriously, if Major League Soccer is to be taken seriously when it comes to their officials, you can't have moments like you had last night because it lends itself to giving more questions than answers. And when you have more questions than answers or more questions than the match itself and enjoying the match for what it is and being the tremendous product that Major League Soccer can be at sometimes, it doesn't make you look good. And there has to be some accountability. Will it come? I doubt it. And that's disappointing and it's sad because you want this league to be shown, especially with the World Cup coming up here in a couple of years, you want this league to be showcased as one of the premier leagues in the world. And when you continue to have moments like this last night with Ted Uncle in the middle and Chris Penso at VAR, who decided after 3.5 minutes of review that something clear and obvious changed their minds, I'd love to know what it was and what the angle was that they saw. Because if those were the four angles that they got, then I got questions. And it's not the first time, but sadly, probably won't be the last. And so, yeah, so that's where things are with me this morning. I know it was more of a philosophical thing this morning when it came to the opening kickoff. But, yeah, that's where we are once again with Major League Soccer and Pro. Once again, a very disappointing element to last night's match with Atlanta United. We'll get into that discussion as a part of everything else that we have here. Once again, Bart Keeler coming up in about 15 minutes. And what I'll do is I'll go back to the top of the order, and we'll basically just kind of run things down as we go, and we'll run them all the way down this morning as we go here. In with Bart, out with Bart, and all those kinds of things. Nico Moreno will be around for his Thursday visit. That'll be on tape later because of the high school football commitments that I have. By the way, blatant promo. Noon Eastern on the GPB Sports Facebook page, countdown to kickoff with Hannah Gooden and myself, where we break down everything getting you ready for week zero. So I guess that's a double version of the opening kickoff, brought to us by our friends at Kickoff Coffee. KickoffCoffeeCO.com. Kickoff Coffee CO on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and there's your QR code at Kickoff Coffee. Use the code soccer down here 15. You get 15% off of your purchase for Kickoff Coffee, and they in turn take 10% of the proceeds and turn them toward youth programs. So very, very cool stuff that we're seeing with our friends at Kickoff Coffee. KickoffCoffeeCO.com. All right, so let's get into your comments, and we'll get into obviously everything else that happened in Major League Soccer last night and everything going on this morning overseas with transfers. Cristiano Ronaldo is apparently saying, you will have answers soon. How about answers now? That might not be a bad thing, instead of holding it back to something where you can have an exclusive interview or something like that. But folks are going to want answers now with Manchester United, and it looks like one of the richest men in the country wants to buy a minority stake that apparently the Glazers are willing to put out onto the market. And Sir Jim Ratcliffe apparently eventually wants to buy the whole thing. So we'll get into all of that stuff as we go. All right. Michael had, since we did not win in the must win match. Yeah, I know. And once again, that margin for error that we talk about continues to narrow and narrow and narrow. You've got to steal points on the road. And we've talked about this before. If you don't get business taken care of at home, you got to do it on the road. And it can't be just one point. So you've got to end up with full points on the road, which is very, very tough in this league. I think that we've talked about it to the idea of somewhere between 15 and 20% of the games are actually won by road teams in Major League Soccer. And we'll get into the standings after we talk about all the other elements that happened last night. The log jams are still there in the East and the West, and Atlanta United is still a part of the log jam in the East, albeit at the bottom of that log jam and having to leapfrog a bunch of folks between now and the end of the season. But once again, the amount of points that you're talking about here is not a lot, but you got a lot of folks that you got to leapfrog, especially after last night's results. Atlanta United at 29 points. You're 4 points out of a playoff spot and 2 wins, basically. So 2 wins out of a playoff spot and 4 points right now, as you have 5 points separating 5 through 13 in the East. Actually, let's go ahead and get into the standings and what happened last night. In the East, after last night, Columbus, with matches in hand with the folks around them, they're at 34 points. They'll get one of those matches taken back this weekend with Atlanta. New England, with their draw last night, 2-2 crazy draw with Toronto. Revs are at 34 points, one more match played, and same number of wins that they have with Columbus. Orlando City right now, last time out of the blocks, they got a win. They're at 33 points. And they have identical record with Inter Miami at 9-6-10. Better goal difference, -8 to -9, something to keep an eye on as we go forward. The third team at 33 points is FC Cincinnati. FC Cincinnati, 25 matches played, 33 points, 8 wins. Charlotte, with the win last night, one of the shocker results. But once again, NYCFC, and we talked about NYCFC, they're not the same team without Tati Castellanos. So they're right now, they've lost 3 in a row. And so Charlotte gets the Duke over NYC. Charlotte's in 10th at 32. Toronto, with their draw, is at 30. Chicago is at 30, 25 matches played. Atlanta's at 29 with 25 matches played. Let's go to the West. The West isn't quite as nuts up top, but it does get crazy with 6 teams separated by 2 points, 6 through 11. LA, 10 wins, 33 points. 2 matches in hand over Vancouver, who got the win last night over Colorado, and so 9 wins, 33 points. Nashville, 8 wins, 33 points. Portland, 7 wins, 33 points. The key for the Galaxy, 2 matches in hand. That gets you to Seattle at 25 matches, 32 points. They've lost 3 of 4. And Colorado with their losses at 31 points. So if you look at the teams in the 30s, let's just look at the teams in 30s across the board in the league. 37 points down to 30 points, and let's go ahead and include Atlanta United at 29. So 18, you have 37 points to 29 points. You have 3, 6, 7, 10, 13, 16 teams in the league from 29 points to 37 points. 16 points out of 28 teams, somewhere from 29 to 37 points. So I think that should tell you where the competition level is right now with Major League Soccer and how everybody is really chasing after everyone else. So Vancouver wins 2-1. Dallas wins 1-0 over Philadelphia at a plus 129. Once again, we talk about how tough it is to win on the road. Charlotte won 3-1. Red Bulls with their win, and Toronto and the Revs with the 2-2 draw at a plus 319. So right now, that's where we are with the standings. Your next matches on the board are Friday Night Football, and that's Galaxy and Sounders. Galaxy are minus 109. Tomorrow on the show, we will have the weekend whip around, patent-pending trademark hopefully coming. We'll talk about all the action on the weekend and get you ready for that. A lot of games to talk through, and it's going to be a very, very busy weekend whip around as we get ready for everything on a weekend. So, Abby, yeah, and Sam, pretty much across the board, yes. Not a good game yet. Sucked. Michael, I know that it says, so disappointed in this team, a team that I've spent thousands of dollars supporting. And, yeah, I mean, you're not the only one in that regard. But, you know, as fans, that's what we do. We invest in those things that are close to us. And because it means a lot, whether it's fandom, community, all those kinds of things. It's just something that we do. That's a part of being a fan. Abby, 3.5 minutes to review bad angles for an offsides call that should have stood. Yep. Totally deflating. And Michael, yes, as knowing that you are the Auburn grad and the boss is as well, I know where you're coming from with the Auburn perspective on things. No, and regardless of goal one happened, absolutely correct. And that's something, once again, that we talked about. You cannot give up an early goal, and you gave up an early goal. So once again, especially with a team like Red Bulls that will do their thing, and then in the final, you know, you look at the numbers last night, they had 26, 27% of the possession. They don't care. It's just like, look, we got a lead. We're good. Boom. Just send it away and you can have the ball and you try to do with it whatever you want. We're going to do two lines. We're going to have two lines of four, eventually bring in a fifth defender to have a line of five and a line of four. Good luck. And so that was what Red Bulls decided to do last night. Not a surprise. That's their MO. Why are all my teams so frustrating? Sam Williamson asks. Yeah, you're not the only one there, sir. Getting into opening kickoff commentary. Michael Head said it time and time again, no reason to complain about Pro. Pro is what it is. And more importantly, MLS seems to be satisfied with Pro. Emilio calls even out, not a factor. South Georgia definitely wasn't clear and obvious. And Abby, in all caps, 3.5 minutes plus of review. Michael Head, Pro going to Pro, no reason to complain. Complain to the MLS owners. Bam, a review should take a minute max. And you'd like to think that a review in these cases will give you, you know, it's like, look, if you're there and you dig it and you know what's going on, then the decision should be real easy. It's like, is it there? Is it not? Yes, no. Bam, you're right on. It should take a minute. Should. But in this case, it didn't. And we saw the end result once again with the goal. Goal turning too. But yeah, there should be some kind of a time limit. Maybe you put a time clock on it. And if something is where, if it's not clear and obvious, then the buzzer goes off and it's like, oh, we couldn't find it. So therefore it has to stand. Maybe you do something like that. I don't know how rational or realistic it is, but at the same time, maybe you put a shot clock on it and see what happens. South Georgia Pro gives us plenty of reason to complain, so we can and will complain. That's what shows like this are for. And, you know, when there are those moments where you can sit there and vent your spleen about it and let folks know what you think. And I think that you know, nothing wrong with letting folks know how you feel. And, you know, I think that the more, sometimes the more that you let folks know how you feel, maybe it will register at some point, but I don't think it's going to register until it is a moment that is so important slash earth shattering, if that makes any sense. Then maybe Major League Soccer will sit there and have a thought. But then again, once again, you know, where do you go? Since Pro is the professional referees organization, where else do you go? That's it. I mean, Pro is Pro. That's the only group. And I think that it comes down to the individual officials themselves and some kind of a review process or what have you. But Pro is Pro. There is no second dealership on the motor mile where you can sit there and it's like, well, if I don't like this car, I can go down to this dealership and get another one. No, right now, Pro is Pro. That's it. But I think that if there's enough hue and cry, hopefully some folks will take it to heart as things continue to go forward. Michael complained to MLS owners about Pro. They employ them. Abby thinks we should protest Pro, a Pro protest, and their professionalism of how they review. How would you do it? That would be the first question that I have. What do you have in mind? And maybe you've done something else in the timeline, but how would you do it, Abby? That would be my question about showing displeasure about the professional referees organization. Michael, only MLS and the ownership can do anything about Pro. And like I said, it's the only game in town. So five stripe dog, I don't know if we're going to get the obligatory oopsie considering what we got from MLS VAR on Twitter. So that might be the end of it. Although I personally would have liked to have known what Chris Penso thought about it and what he saw and which version he saw when he saw it to reverse the call from to make it a clear and obvious error. But when you ask a center ref a question, it has to be posed in the most perfect grammatical way possible. Because, you know, if you're looking for a particular response, then you've got to phrase the question right. Otherwise, you'll get like a very curt response back and it'll be just like, yeah, I saw it this way. It was clear and obvious. No, but you've got to phrase it. You've got to phrase it right. You have to phrase it right. And I mean right. Underlined, italicized, boldface, 32 font. You've got to phrase it correctly. Otherwise, it's just going to be dismissed and you're going to get a boilerplate answer. And you might get a boilerplate answer anyway. But it's got to be phrased correctly with the officials. That is the bottom line. Let's see. South Georgia, no people leave reviews for bad service, poor quality all the time. This is our time to give bad reviews against coach, players, pro, or others. Michael Head knows nothing about pro at USL. I'm sure they do a bad job in that league as well. But yeah, but I think also, Michael, to your point, I think that what you can also do if you are at the Major League Soccer level, and you saw this at the Premier League level with Mike Dean. Mike Dean retired as an on-field official. And this is what I'd like to see with Major League Soccer, is that once you retire from on-field, you go to VAR. And that way your expertise is there and you get to lend your expertise in another way and still contribute to the game. But because Mike Dean was VAR for Chelsea and Spurs, and missed the Mark Cucurella hair pull, which was absolutely blatant. And we'll get to Bart Keeler coming up here in just a second, because when I hear a little noise in my ears and I get to see Bart in the cue speaker, I know that I get that he's hanging out with us. But Mike Dean was in charge of VAR, and he was taken off VAR for next week because of the fact that he missed the Cucurella call where the hair pull was inside the penalty area, which, because he missed it, lent itself to the second corner, which lent itself to the tying goal. So it would have to be something that catastrophic and figure out how to work on it from here. So I will put the bookmark in right there. We might even have Bart as a part of this process too. So, you know, since it is 9:30 and as promised, guess who's here? There he is, Bart Keeler. I'm learning technology, Bart.
I know, I'm so proud of you.
It's like, all right, so which button am I pushing and am I going here and here and here? It's all these sequences and orders and everything. And I'm like, oh, it's like there's 9 seconds on this intro. What am I pushing? What have I forgotten? You know, it's like literally pulling back the curtain behind the scenes on making sure all this stuff works. How you doing, partner?
You know, I'm doing well. I have to say, I'm going to brag. It's opening weekend for high school football season, Corky Kell this weekend.
Corky I was voted Kell yesterday.
That's true. One of my little brothers, they're seniors at Archer High School, and one of them is leading the paint line for Archer High School's red zone this year. And that makes me happy as former most spirited at South Gwinnett High School. The tradition continues in the family. It's very nice to see.
Nothing like a little Gwinnett County love there for high school football.
Yeah, I always remind them Archer was not even a thing when I was in high school, which I don't think they think as an insult much more as it's just telling how old I am now. But
well, I could say the same thing about Lakeside DeKalb. And when I was there, we, you know, it was a national school of excellence. We haven't been a national school of excellence since. Draw your own parallel. But as I sit here and promote the fact that you're on the show, let's see, I'm doing Twitter here. It says you're talking anything he wants to talk about for his hashtag Thursday thoughts, something like that. At least, and of course, I can't spell as I'm trying to type at the same time. Thursday thoughts, there's the hashtag, and there you've been effectively promoted on the Twitters. Okay. I spent most of the first half hour talking about goal number two, which should not have been a goal in the first place. And obviously, we'll go back and talk about goal number one and everything else that happened. But it was more the philosophical element of goal number two and how, once again, Pro spent entirely too much time on an item that was initially registered as offside, goal disallowed. Then Chris Penso vibrates the watch or sends the signal down to Ted Uncle, hey, go look at this. 3.5 minutes go by on Abby's timer. And 3.5 minutes it takes for them to reverse a call.
Mm-hmm.
That to me does not sound like clear and obvious if you're spending 3.5 minutes trying to break something down like, you know, the magic loogie in Seinfeld, you know?
Yeah. So let's walk through the decisions a little bit because this is, I think, a philosophical question for referees when we're talking about what is and isn't an advantage, gaining advantage from being in an offside position, right? So the initial goal is scored. The player, Colina, was in an offside position when Tolkien kicked the ball. That is, I think, at least from every angle that I've seen, a very clear ruling that he was in an offside position.
Right.
The question now becomes, did he gain an advantage from being in an offside position? The initial call on the field was even delayed a little bit too. I don't know if Ted Uncle thought, how dare you tell me that I was wrong, because he has that about him to his AR. But it did take a while for Ted Uncle to look at the AR. It looked like he was questioning if it was even, you know, the AR had the right call on the field. And that to me does kind of lend itself to the referee crew didn't seem to quite all agree on whether or not Colina impeded, impacted, obstructed, whatever, somehow the goal being scored. From my personal experiences and from what my personal knowledge is of the application of Law 11 offside, the end result was the correct result. Now, as a person who has played this game and who has refereed a long time as well, I think that we kind of forget that a player in an offside position like that who comes back onside to try to head a ball, clearly tries to head a ball, like clearly makes a play to head the ball,
mm-hmm.
absolutely impacts whatever happens behind him. You know, obviously, Rocco Rios Novo had to take that into account when he was going to save the ball. I mean, he couldn't start his movement toward that corner until it cleared Colina's head. So I think in those instances, the fact that it was called offside on the field, you have to trust the judgment of that assistant referee that this did impact play. Now, the question here for me becomes, and this is where we get into this, again, philosophical discussion of what does it mean to become involved in active play?
Right.
a lot of referees say you have to touch the ball. And I vehemently disagree with that. That's for me, philosophically, being involved in active play does not mean you touch the ball. And I think that was the question that they were trying to go for here was, okay, did he touch the ball? Okay, well, he didn't. So once you say, oh, he didn't touch the ball, now we are getting to the questions of, well, did he really impact the play behind him? Did he gain an advantage from being in an offside position? And taking all of that into account, based on what IFAB and U.S. Soccer have relayed to me through my 12 years of refereeing experience,
right?
I think they ended up with the right call. But I still think that's not consistent with the spirit of the game, and especially not consistent with the call that was made on the field initially, where it is very clear that Kalina was in an offside position, to me anyway, came back onside to make a play on a cross, a shot cross, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, right.
And but therefore, to me, gained an advantage by being in an offside position, especially because if I'm a defender, I've held my line and he's behind me.
And if I'm Rocco Rios Novo, I'm trying to line up a way to save.
Yes.
And if Klamala is in an offside position to start, comes back onside, and then hops up in the air and is basically screening me from making my initial play. It's like, okay, I've lined this up. I think I know where it's coming from. And then Klamala goes up, restricts, you know, it's like he blocks out the sun. And then until the ball has cleared him, then I have to make a response. And then by then it's too late.
Yeah.
So by definition, he's impacted the play because I can't do anything until it passes over him.
Yep. And so for me personally, I think that the initial call on the field was correct. And we've seen this happen before. This was a slightly different circumstance where a player came back into an onside position when he made the action on the ball. But I think that the initial call on the field for me was correct, or at least was good enough that it wasn't clear and obvious that it was wrong. And so that's the problem. However, that doesn't take away the fact that Atlanta United again concedes on a corner kick and again squanders an opportunity in a quote must win or incredibly important game. And again, loses a game at home. And despite what you want to talk about Joseph getting that goal at the final minute, it looked utterly incapable of scoring throughout the regulation 90 minutes.
When you look at, and I know once again, we talked about what you can't do, and Atlanta United had it happen again with giving up a goal early.
We do a lot of things you can't do.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to state my thesis right now.
We're not
a very good soccer team.
Okay.
That's just we may have a lot of really good players. Clearly, we spent a lot of money on players. I'm looking at our salary right now, our market value right now, we're $14 million. More expensive than any other team in the league. And that one's Toronto, which has Insigne on their roster.
Chris Chito and Bernadeschi and all of those
AM
signings.
Yeah. We're not a good soccer team.
So then
So when you're not good, you can't have mistakes like that.
Right. True. And so then let me ask you this. Adding in the context of 20 injuries on a 37, player availability this season and multiple players being injured more than once. When it comes to the relationships of these individuals and practice, it's different than game state. And I would posit that when you bring players back in from injury and they're back out there in game state, it takes a while for those relationships to get back to where they were. Because, I mean, I'm sure in a game state situation that Ronald Hernandez and Juanjo Purata are basically sitting there shaking hands and going, hi, my name is Juanjo. Hi, my name is Ronald, out in a game situation. They're still trying to figure out how things are. Unfortunately, you're in a situation where you're chasing points and you're chasing positions. And it's that double-edged idea of like, okay, we're getting folks healthy, but at the same time, your schedule's compressing and the margin for error is compressing and all of these other things that you can't afford to have happen are happening because mercifully you're getting folks healthy. It's a double-edged sword here, I feel at times.
So you're not wrong about relationships and partnerships on the field. However, these guys have been playing soccer for a very long time and playing, most of them playing at a professional level for quite some time. And it's not like there's that great of a difference between general structures of play. And to me, that's the issue that we have right now with this team. And I'm going to go in on Pineda a little bit here. Our defense is way too easily disorganized. And that's not a, oh, well, I'm not quite sure where Ronald's going to be in this. Something that when you're talking about the system you're playing in, you should know where your player is. Now, that may be a problem of, oh, well, Ronald hasn't had as much training. But homeboy's been in the system under Pineda for a year and a half now. So it's not like he shouldn't be aware of what Pineda's doing.
But once with the relationship with Hernandez as an example is what I'm...
I understand what you're saying, John.
Yeah.
I understand. But at some point, you are what your record says you are.
Right.
And we're a team that does not win most of the time it goes out to play soccer.
Then let me ask you this. We've talked about the back. What do you do at the front?
Score. You're paying a lot of guys a lot of money to not freaking score.
Right.
And at the end of the day, that part of the field, that specific part of this team, hasn't really been all that affected by injuries. You could talk about Joseph all you want being out, but you still had a guy in Ronald Cisneros who has been here for quite some time, who has been pretty effective. Maybe not as consistent as you would want, but still effective and has been able to, at no point have we really looked incapable of facilitating good attacking play. The problem does come where when it comes time to actually score, to find balls that find someone in the box, has been very hard. The first goal Red Bulls scored last night, they had like four guys in and around the 18 completely unmarked. And these guys are guys who freaking, if you ask them their name, you think they were, you know, a high school lacrosse player, not a professional soccer player. You don't know who these people are. And you're looking at an Atlanta United attack that has three DPs currently, a dude who used to be a DP because we had to panic buy a DP to make our fans feel better instead of just buying another therapy pet. And you're not getting any production out of guys you've paid a lot of money for. And that we're scoring goals. I mean, we've scored 34 goals this year, but we're not, our XG isn't any better than what the goals we're scoring. Our XG on the season, I looked it up this morning, it's like 34.7. We've scored 34 goals this year. So we're not getting the benefit of overperforming XG. Part of that is because we're not taking high quality shots because we're getting in positions where we cross the ball in and it's only Joseph in the box. Again, Red Bulls has four guys unmarked at the top of the box when they score their first goal. And anytime we put a cross into the box, it's Joseph versus three guys. We don't have anyone else crashing the box with them. We don't have back post runs coming in to get on the end of a cross that misses about the entire defense. So I don't know. I don't know particularly if that's the players necessarily or if that's Pineda not instructing attacking runs the way he wants in his system. But at the end of the day, you're paying a lot of money to guys who aren't helping you win. And that's really frustrating.
When it comes to all of that firepower, I admit that a lot of folks, and this is a Joseph Martinez section here. I know a lot of folks want to have previous knee injury Joseph out there for Atlanta United, but it's not there. And trying to find ways to have him integrate is probably one of the biggest elements this season, because where Joseph is concerned, you have to work with his health, with his health and his conditioning, mm-hmm. and on a game by game basis with all of this mm-hmm. firepower and trying to figure out how to integrate Joseph Martinez. Do you start him and hope he gives you 60? Do you have him come off the bench and sprint for 30? And it's, you know, when you have someone like this who's coming off of two surgeries on a surgically repaired knee, who is the quality of Joseph Martinez or has been in the past at 99 goals, now 100. I think that Joseph has been one of the larger questions this year. And it's a game by game basis as to how you figure out how he can best be used. My gut tells me, and like I said, I have no basis in fact in any of this. My gut tells me is that he does not start on the weekend because he went 90 last night. He will come off the bench in Columbus and try to give you 30 because of the quick turnaround. And it's something that has to be juggled and has been juggled this year by Gonzalo Pineda and the staff.
So I think you're right in that sense. I mean, I don't know if Joseph is capable of going 90 and then even going 60 the next game. We have no evidence to say that he has that ability.
Right.
But no, the issue has been, what does Joseph do for this team right now?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying he doesn't do anything for this team, but it's, what does he do for this team? And is that what makes this team better? Mm-hmm. Because he has transitioned into much more of a hold up connector type guy. And that's fine. Like, that is he has been pretty decent at that. You know, I think he could stop the dummies and crossovers a little bit, does that a little too frequently, but he's, again, we're not creating good attacking opportunities. The problem is we're not getting into the box the way we need to. So is that a Joseph problem?
Or is that the defense of the opposition?
No, I think it's a system issue with our offense, where if Joseph is withdrawing to be a little bit more connected with the midfield, which, again, I don't think is a problem in itself.
Yeah,
you have to have guys who are willing to get in the box behind him. But yeah, I mean, look, Red Bulls, for, again, I mentioned that they had four guys unmarked at the top of the box in their goal. They never had fewer than three guys back defensively. So that is a legitimate problem. Joseph's not going to beat three guys. He's not going to beat three Red Bull defenders who, you know, are sitting back there ready to pounce on any touch he makes or any pass he makes. So yeah, defensively, teams are, especially after you've scored, given up two early goals, they're able to kind of sit back and not risk the players going forward.
Right.
But again, this isn't like, oh my gosh, we've got two goals scored. No, you created the situation that you're in. So why are we talking about all these excuses and states of games when you're the ones who keep creating the game state that you're in?
Yeah.
Because we dominated for the first 10 minutes. We really did.
That is true.
We didn't get a goal.
Right. And, you know, and when I know a lot of folks look at statistics, but Red Bulls want nothing to do with the ball. They think the ball has cooties, basically. And the Red Bulls are like, you know, don't want it. You can have it, and we'll just sit and defend. And they went from two lines of four to a line of five and a line of four when they were up two in the second half. And they were just like, all right, see ya. Well, you can work the rest of it and work your way, you know, from your end all the way. You can expend all the energy. We've got a two-goal advantage. You know, knock yourself out. Have fun. It played into their hands. Once again, it went to that giving up of the early goal, something that you cannot do, and they did it again.
This has been my frustration with this team all year, is that we give up easy goals.
Yeah.
So again, looking back at the XG, and XG in game, we know is not a great indicator of like how the game actually played out. But XG across the season is a pretty good indicator of how you're performing. And our expected goals against, 34.8.
Right.
So that's about dead even as our expected goals for. So in theory, we're doing okay. But we've actually given up 38. So we're giving up four. You know, that doesn't sound like a whole lot, but that's four goals across, what are we at, 24, 23 games this season?
Efforting.
I think it's 23, 24 games.
Hang on.
Does indicate that we are giving up goals that we shouldn't be giving up. Now, the second goal last night, I think, is one of those it happened types of goals, right? Like, I mean, whether or not he was onside or offside is one thing, but that type of goal is an unfortunate series of events that compiles the fact that we still don't know how to defend set pieces all that.
But to my larger philosophical point this morning, it is an unfortunate series of events, regardless of we're talking Atlanta United.
Yeah.
It is an unfortunate series of events that continues to happen where Pro is concerned, and that's concerning for Major League Soccer. And not that I know that Pro really, you know, cares about what happens, and they'll give an oopsie and a news dump.
Right.
But it, to me, like I said, I understood, and I think we've all stipulated and agreed that the first goal should not have happened. That's why I put the first goal to the side as, you know, as evidence, as you know, facts and evidence, and went to the philosophical issue of the second goal, because if that does not exist, which it should not, And it is a philosophical problem that I think we all have with pro, and they should have themselves, but they don't. The Joseph goal at 90 plus four yields a point versus none.
Does it?
I think we can, if we extrapolate the information with facts and evidence, goal comes off the board.
If we extrapolate the evidence.
Yeah.
Red Bulls up until the 90th minute, and I think they finished with, and again, XG in game, not exactly a great metric, but finished with a 0.95 XG. Mm-hmm. Up until Joseph's goal, mm-hmm. we had less than 0.5 XG. Joseph's goal is a really high value chance. That's great. But that was clearly the only one we had got all match. Red Bulls were creating a lot of shots up to that point. They were getting more shots inside the box than we were. So to your point, I understand what you're saying. Yes, that goal may not happen, but we also have no evidence to the contrary that we wouldn't have already conceded a second goal had Red Bulls continued on the path of trying to find a second goal. Because after that second goal, they were very much more happy to just sit back. Yeah. Obviously, yeah. We would be too. But I don't think there's any evidence to show that we wouldn't have, that we at Atlanta United would not have conceded another goal because, you know, now maybe we would have gotten a goal. I don't know, because obviously these are things we don't have evidence for, but we can only look at what we had. And it wasn't like we were getting a lot of high quality chances or shots in and around the goal area. Okay. Up until Joseph's goal. Right. We got one, Joseph converted. Thank God. Mm-hmm. So one positive from last night is Joseph got 100. Actually, there are multiple positives last night. The dumplings from SoCoMe were good. Okay. Joseph got goal 100 and we get a dollar off Mo's today. So
I was going to say, what were your positives last night? And you named your three. Okay.
Dumplings are good.
Okay. when you look at Columbus, since I'm not going to have you as a part of, the weekend whip around with Jarrett tomorrow, as looking ahead to Columbus, what are you looking at in this one? Obviously the drawing cards for Columbus are Cucho and Lucas Celarayán.
Yeah, so I think that to me is going to be an issue. Again, I mentioned that our defense is very easily disorganized, and Cucho and Celarayán are guys who can very easily organize a defense, both by themselves on the ball or passing or movement off the ball. And that does concern me. You know, you're looking at a team that sits above the playoff line, is battling for a home playoff match, and looking at Atlanta United's record since 2019, we don't do well against playoff teams. You know, we have one win on the road. You would love to get a draw, but at this point, that doesn't really help you. It doesn't. You know, you're at the point where
you got to steal points on the road.
You've got to actually steal points on the road, not a draw. Right. Draws are fine. I'm never going to complain about a draw on the road in MLS.
Right.
And I think this team is fully capable of getting a draw on the road. I don't know if they're fully capable of holding a team below two goals.
So then if you were in charge of the lineup card, how would you lay it out?
So, I mean, I think right now, if you can have, I think this is another thing we're not talking about with Pineda, and I know it's hard for him because this is where injuries do factor in, but he made a very conscious decision to start Caleb Wiley at left back, and he got cooked on that first goal. Not all his fault. I'm not blaming a 17-year-old for not performing at the highest level all the time, but he made the decision to start Wiley over Gutman. I think that reason is because you're going to try to start Gutman on the weekend.
Yeah,
and obviously we know that he had some fatigue issues at the end of the season. Like, I get it. I get it. But the decision was made that Gutman would rest. So I think you're starting Gutman on that left side, be it that left center back or left fullback. I mean, we played an actual four-back system last night for the most part. So I think you could see that. If Lennon can go 90, I think it can go 60, I would start him. But I think you're starting Ronald Hernandez on the right side, which, you know, is fine, whatever. Midfield should probably be still Sosa, Moreno, Almada. I don't think you're losing anything with those guys defensively, because it's not like we haven't been solid defensively up until this point.
Thiago Almada has been lightning when it comes to backtracking and helping out defensively.
Yeah, I mean, I saw him last night sprint 20, 30 yards to go catch someone on a breakaway that he was still in an attack mode. So yeah. So that midfield three would just stay the same. But up top, I would go, if you start Gutman on the left, I would start Wiley, Cisneros, and Araujo.
Okay. Before you go, folks are also commenting in the Twitch pitch about Rocco's efforts last night outside.
Yeah, let's talk about Rocco. I love talking about Rocco. First off, I'm never going to blame the fact that we have our fourth string 20-year-old starting goalkeeper having to start matches like this. Not ever going to blame him. He's not. The fact that we're in this position sucks, right? That's the reality, you know. The first goal, I think he probably could have done better on. The second goal, you would like for him to be able to get a little bit more distance on his dive, but that's just, you know, he had to wait so long. Mm-hmm. I think overall, Rocco has been perfectly fine. I'm not saying he is a good goalkeeper. He's also 20. He's at the stage where goalkeepers are also still learning. You know, I'm impressed when goalkeepers catch the ball more often than not at 20 years old. I mean that sincerely, because it's just a skill that you continue to grow into. He is performing better and better, I think, each week with how he plays with the team. But at the end of the day, he's not supposed to be back there. It's just the unfortunate reality of the injury situation. As also, you know, it's one of those things where if he started more games than any other goalkeeper we've had this year,
mm-hmm.
you know? So again, I think he's been fine. I think he's been about as good as you could want from him. I really do enjoy his passing out of the back. I think it's really beneficial to the team, but at the end of the day, your job as a goalkeeper is to stop shots. And he hasn't proven to be that good of a shot stopper. But I'd also say that a lot of the goals we give up are soft goals that come from defensive errors more than they come from a goalkeeper error.
Folks are requesting things. We might end up having to hold.
That's fine. That's fine.
We'll hold you past the top now and keep you going.
I think we'll be okay.
Don't want you to get in trouble with your actual boss when the headset gets taken.
Yeah.
So let me know when you turn into a pumpkin if we really get into stoppage time here. Turner wants to know what you think about the USWNT U20.
Yeah. I think it sucks that we didn't get out of the group, but we also got stuck in the group with Netherlands and Japan, that are very, very good women's programs. Like, just very good. Japan won the dang thing last time around. They're a very good team. Clearly, they beat us 3-1 last night. I think the problem for me was defensively, this team had some issues. And I do think defensively that those issues come from really just a little bit lack of inexperience and a lack of continuity. The coach, I cannot think of her name right now, I'm sorry, but she rotated a lot during the tournament. And that seems to be a theme with US teams, is we like to rotate in these tournaments when we have, you know, and they weren't necessarily jam-packed games. The last game we played was Sunday. So it's not like it was, you know, a two-day break like a lot of youth tournaments, but it's disappointing. I don't know if it is any cause for alarm bells necessarily. The U.S. women have done okay at these tournaments, but not recently. And I think that's just more a product of the fact that our development system for the U.S. Doesn't really produce good players until after the age of 23. And I mean that because most of our women players don't come up through professional academies like a lot of European players do. So the first time that they're really getting high level expected results training is at the college level, which is a very great development process for women's game in this country. You know, so when you look at Olivia Moultrie and Michelle Cooper, they're going to be good players, I think, especially Cooper. She's fantastic. I don't think that this particular tournament is a bad, like, it's concerning because we didn't get out of the group, sure. We also didn't make it out of the group, like, the last two times, I think. So it's not like these youth tournaments are super indicative of success at the women's level. What it is indicative of is, yeah, the rest of the world is catching up to us. And you know what? That's because the rest of the world is investing in their women's football, and that's a positive.
Okay, as you sit there, you were doing your best to just like sit here and try and find the coach's name just in time, but you didn't talk long enough. Anyway,
I know. I'm sorry.
All right,
and it's Tracy Kearns or something like that. But don't quote me on that.
Okay. Then also on the board, folks wanted to know what you thought about the jersey leak, and what you think about the possible probable men's national team jersey that might be probably maybe the new jersey.
The only positive I have, especially from the white jersey that was leaked later yesterday, the only positive I can say is the red and blue sleeve accents looks very similar to the 2019 Women's World Cup jersey that I really, really liked. But it's not very inspiring by any stretch of the imagination. It's not very, I think the players have been very upfront the fact they don't love it. And that's disappointing, especially because we've had 8 years to come up with a jersey. Now, I think this is my philosophy on all of this, is that the jerseys that we were supposed to have at the World Cup in 2018, you know, this kind of like gradient stripe ones, would have sold a lot better had we been in the World Cup. And they didn't sell well because we missed the World Cup and there were a lot of people just upset. And I think had we been in the World Cup, those jerseys would have sold better. And I think Nike would have said, oh, this type of design makes more money. Because at the end of the day, all Nike cares about is money. They don't care about a consistent look for the U.S. men's national team for some reason. I don't know why they think, I don't know. But they just don't. These jerseys are not good. They're just not. They're not. I'm a big fan. I can handle a plainish white jersey because I think that's what the U.S. has always played in for the most part. But if the rumored blue bleach stain jersey is what it is, it's going to be bad.
Bring back the denims. That's all I want to say.
I tell you, for me personally, I'm a big fan, and Nike's done it a couple times in recent memory, of red and blue stripes on a jersey. I think you look at the 2017 Gold Cup kits and the away kits we currently wear with the red and blue. I know it may not be the most, like, it's a little clashy with the eye, but it definitely looks American. And it's a kit that you can wear that contrasts well with other opponents, because if they're wearing red or blue, then you just wear white.
Okay.
And yes, I think Pulley, I think Pulley should stay at Chelsea.
That was going to be my third question. Sorry. For you.
I see Turner asking these questions.
The Christian Pulisic situation.
No, keep Christian Pulisic in bubble wrap.
Well, but then he doesn't get reps between now and Qatar.
He'll play enough for Chelsea. He'll play. Just okay. It's fine. If he's only playing 10 to 12 minutes every game, I'm okay with that. It's less chance of injury. I don't think Pulisic should go to Manchester United when, for me personally, I think if I'm Christian, I write it out with Chelsea where I am. Okay. Hope you have a really good, bet on yourself to have a good World Cup, and that increases your value and your desire. Going into the winter transfer window, and maybe teams say, oh, well, we need a player like this on our team. I don't think Manchester United is the place for Christian Pulisic to go. Now, on the flip side, I think maybe Sergiño Dest to Manchester United makes a little bit more sense, because he's just not playing at Barcelona at all.
Does anybody to Manchester United make any sense right now? I would.
The only one that legitimately the only one that I'm not like mad at is Sergiño Dest to Barcelona, because Erik ten Hag, there's the Ajax connection. And I think that would be better than being at a place where no one wants you. Because Barcelona is not a good club right now. Chelsea is at least a club that in theory is in a better place than Barcelona and Manchester United. Man U and Barcelona are very similar.
Okay.
But that's the only one I can think of. But I would rather Dest go to other places than Man U, but that seems to be one that's linked with them. So if that gets them out of Barcelona, then fine.
And if you're at Chelsea, make sure that you look Tommy Tuchel right in the eyes when you go with the handshake. Otherwise, yeah. It goes with the death grip on the handshake pass.
Yeah. I've got news for you, Tuchel. I like Antonio Conte in that matchup. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. That's got to be some dirty fighting there. I mean, because Conte knows how to handle himself out there on the pitch.
Yeah.
Especially when the officials ain't looking. When the refs ain't looking, you know how to get in a shot here or there. I would go with Conte hands down with the with as Nicolifi says, the raccoon stapled to his head. I would still, yes. I would still go
yeah. I would never bet against Antonio Conte in a matchup of physical skill.
Yeah. What else is going on in the Bartimus Prime world these days?
I'm refereeing soccer a lot. So I'll be coming out with an episode of Soccer for Us in the near future. Obviously, it's kind of like a weird lull in the schedule, but with the women's friendlies coming up against Nigeria in the beginning of September, we'll have a episode talking about that roster and talking about what has kind of happened and transpired with the men's team and all their transfers this summer. Obviously, things are still going. I wanted to do like a, oh, the season has started, but then like, you've got Christian Pulisic rumors. You've got Dest rumors. You had guys like Miazga leave, you know. But so we'll have a wrap up of all those transfers once the transfers are done, because they're not done. I think you'll see a men's national team player or two make some transfers during this particular window. It may not be big names, but I think you'll see one or two more move. And so then we'll go from there. I mean, we've got two friendlies for the men up in September. So September picks right back up to all the excitement. It's been nice to have like a couple weeks where we didn't have to think about it.
So how do folks follow and listen and all those kinds of fun things?
So you can follow me at Bartimus Prime 19 on Twitter or at Soccer for Us Pod for stuff about the show. If you want to ask a question of the Soccer for Us podcast, you can do so. The link is in that Twitter profile, and we'll try to answer them as we get on. And I'm trying to find a regular schedule, but the problem is with US soccer teams, it's like, well, they don't have regular schedules. So
the only regular schedule that we have is us at 9:05 on the
yeah podcast. That's about it. Everything else is just what we end up being able to record. I get it.
Well, Bart, thanks for hopping on a Thursday for a reaction Thursday. I'm not going to call it over because some are over, under, and on par, depending on where folks are coming from. For a reaction Thursday, thanks for hopping on. You realize, of course, now that you've opened the forbidden door for 9:30s on Thursday, that you might turn this into a regular thing?
And that's okay. I'm free 9:30s most days of the week, so that works.
All right. Well, be good, my friend, and we will catch up with you. See, you open the door.
I know.
Be catching up with you very soon, my friend.
Thanks, John. Enjoy high school football this week.
You know it, brother. Bart Keeler hanging out with us, and so that's Bart, and it's good to catch up with Bart. Glad to have him hanging out with us here on Thursday for all of your thoughts. And so what we're going to do now is we are going to go through the remainder of the thoughts. And I know that there's a lot of them, so we'll get into all of those as we go forward. Just again, a reminder, GH, I know that you mentioned on Twitter when it comes to Jason being back. Yeah, we miss him too. But the biggest thing is just to make sure that Jason is as healthy as humanly possible, fighting long COVID. And the number one priority is that he get healthy, be healthy, stay healthy as he can, and be there to call the Atlanta United action and the college stuff that he does. So just keep the warmest vibes and thoughts heading his way. I mean, long COVID is a bear. It's a beast, and he's fighting it as best he can on a day-by-day basis. And so, we miss him here, but there should be some fingers crossed. There might be some tape stuff coming up with Jason coming up down the line. But yeah, right now for Jason, it is making sure that he is as healthy as humanly possible on a daily basis. And so with me and Jarrett and the regular cast of folks that come dropping by, that we will continue to do this now that I've almost learned technology. So we'll be doing this on a daily basis. Times might be a little wonky, but we'll, 9:05 in length might be a little wonky, but 9:05 on Turner time. We'll be back here Monday through Friday, and we'll be back at it again tomorrow. Since we have reached past the halfway point, it's time to read the promo about our folks over my left shoulder. Brought to you by our friends at Alumni Service for odor-free, clean, fresh air. That's the one place that you need to go to tackle that issue, deodorizing in closed spaces like houses, apartments, and condos. They've created a customized solution that eliminizes all organic odors, including those like pet cigarettes and food. Realtors and property managers use Alumni Service to eliminate bad odors to help them sell or rent their homes that much faster. It's a turnkey process that makes it easy to work with said realtors and property managers. kind of the environment. We like that these days, offering a green way to get rid of odors without any kind of toxic residue whatsoever. Different than our favorite masking agents that we have under the sink, because when you reach into the cabinet or under the sink, you bring it out and you spray it in the air, you're just masking the problem. You're not attacking the odor all the way down to the molecule like Aluminize does with their proven scientific formula. Pricing done one of two ways, either by cubic feet or parts per million. Take them up, pull the price that is affordable for you, offering results in 24 hours or less. If you have any questions, frequently asked or otherwise, one place you need to go, it's their website, Aluminize.com. For those of you watching on Twitch over my left shoulder, Aluminize.com, but add the / Atlanta after that so they know what part of the world that you are asking the question from, so you can get help from our friends at Aluminize. So Aluminize.com / Atlanta, Aluminize.com/Atlanta, Aluminize.com/Atlanta for odor-free, clean, fresh air. Proud sponsors of everything SDH. All right, let's get back into the Twitch pitch and the timelines and the questions that you guys have. Jason Wright posted on Soccer Down Here Twitter last week's game results. Once again, reminder, if you've missed the double game week action from yesterday, don't forget to fill out your fantasy rosters. And I am playing Chris Ashley this week. Can I be the one to add an L to Chris Ashley for the first time this year? It's a tight one after day number one. Let's see. Emilio, did I read something about Gutman referencing something to the effect that we're trying to play the way that the fans find exciting but not clicking? It would be troubling because this year I think the fans show that wins are more important. I think the biggest takeaway from Andrew's comments last night, Emilio, had to do with it took a while for them to turn the engine over when it was down 2-0. And, you know, when you're down 2-0, you could tell that after that second goal, that first 8 to 10 minutes that we were talking about with Bart and that we talked about early, they were getting opportunities and they were working their way into the attacking third and inside the 18. There was the one pass that went from Luis just past Joseph, and it was a close call. I want to say it's in the eighth minute. Yeah, eighth minute, and it was a transitional opportunity. But no, it was just took them too long to, you know, get everything underneath them when they're down 2-0. And fortunately, by then, you're really fighting uphill after the first 18, 19 minutes. Let's see. Michael says, when some people were throwing shade on Charlotte's roster build prior to the season start, I was saying, don't do it. Charlotte jumps out to a great start, almost ties us at home, then beats us. Now look at the table. Who's 13th? Not the expansion team. Michael, the roster build in Charlotte was bad. They were still looking for folks even after the first couple of weeks. And it has taken them some time to get where they wanted to be, especially after the getting rid of Miguel Angel Ramirez. And so, they're working their way back to they're regressing to the mean. I think that they're getting back to where I thought we would see them at this point of the year, having to take care of business at home, winning the games that are against your peers, but then you go to Los Angeles and you get thumped. I think that somewhere there in the middle is where Charlotte is. I don't think they'll make the playoffs this year, but obviously we've seen them out of the blocks. Miguel Angel Ramirez did great work with the roster that he had. And now you're seeing, I think that when you have older players like a Christian Fuchs, who really doesn't need to be starting in Major League Soccer, that you're still trying to figure out how to work your way through a season. And it's a learning experience. But, Charlotte got a great result last night against NYC. But NYC's lost 3 in a row, and we mentioned in the first hour that they are still not the same without Tati Castellanos. So I think that Charlotte is regressing to their mean. I don't think that Charlotte will be making the playoffs. But once again, great showing by them in their first year with everything laid out by Charlotte in season number one. So, looking at everybody else here, Turner, question about the team. We all agree changes need to happen. However, with several matches left in the season and a transfer window closed, what can really change at that point outside of going out and winning the next 90? Well, you get Gutman, and like I said, I'm attacking this as it was coming up in the timeline, so I apologize if it was answered later or later on in the show. It kept up to this particular point when I address it. You're getting Gutman back healthy. You're getting Brooks Lennon back to full song. you're hoping that you can get to Mateus, who sets you back, because considering he's week to week with the ankle injury that he got when he landed on Joseph's instep and hurt himself that way at the last home match. So it's just literally trying to come up with those combinations game by game that can get you forward and give you the best chance at getting full points. And so that's it, Turner. You got to go out and win the next 90. That's what you are right now, but you're also getting folks healthy that you'd hoped it would have been a part of the equation for more than they have been. So that's how I'm looking at it. Tom, the team flat out stinks, which seems impossible given the individual talent. You look at, let's see, who else has been looking at things this morning? Like I said, I'm scanning through. And so, like I said, if I miss a comment, then cycle it back in. Five Stripe says we could end up with the spoon. Think about that. I think DC is going to get the spoon, or possibly Kansas City. I don't think that that's going to happen. Tom, once again, wants a complete reset when the new president gets in-house, cleaning top to bottom. But so then what I would do in a situation like this, and I know that we'll be having these discussions probably daily going forward. If you offer a solution to the floor, I would like to posit this as a policy going forward. If there's a solution that you have, and it's, you know, with Tom in a situation like this, a complete house cleaning top to bottom, new president, house cleaning top to bottom, what would you like to see? What would your expectation be? Is, you know, and personnel, individual, personality type? That's what I would like to see. If you have something like that as an idea, what would you like to see, and follow that information in behind it so we can continue to have these kinds of discussions going forward? So if you're looking for a complete reset, what kind of a president are you looking for? What kind of individuals are you looking for? So how would you build if you're looking for a complete reset? Let me see your architecture if you're looking for a complete build. So that's what I would posit with these kinds of thoughts that we have. And like I said, I know we'll have them going forward for the remainder of the season, probably on a daily basis. But if you have a suggestion like that, bring in information to come with it to fill out your dossier so we can see where you're coming from with the thought process. Let's see. If Michael Head, if we lose Sunday, DC strings together a couple of wins and our home match with DC becomes the spoon battle, I don't think it gets to that point. Parsival, can we stop kidding ourselves that Joseph is going to make a miraculous comeback? We need a DP that's going to have more impact on the game. Cisneros is making more impact than a guy making $3 million. Emilio, nothing seems to change about giving up the early goal, and that's one of the biggest things. You know, we say it on a game-by-game analysis basis. Can't give up the early goal. You've given up the early goal. And let's see. Michael Head noticed advertisements for the 2023 season tickets. Maybe those ads have been there in the past, but I'd never seen them before. Plus, we just exited the season ticket renewal period. I don't know, but I think they have been up there for a while. Will, when are we going to get a few of these game-changing incorrect calls in our favor? That's the million-dollar question. Really, that is the million-dollar question. Let's see. Also on the board, match looked about right for a fourth place team visiting a 13th place team. But once again, remember, you know, you look at the standings going into last night, they were only separated by 8 points. I know that we look at the standings in the conference and we sit there and we say, okay, Atlanta United's 13th. But once again, you're 4 points out of a playoff spot, 4 points out of a playoff spot with 9 matches to go. And so, yes, every match is important, and I will continue to say this. But look at the points out of the playoff race. Don't look at the left-hand side of the ledger, because it's going to drive you crazy. Look at the right-hand side of the ledger so you can sit there and see what the team needs to do. And, yes, there's a lot of hopscotching that has to be done. But remember, 5 through 13 separated by 5 points. 5 through 13. So you take care of your business. Don't worry about everybody else. You work your way up the table, and then that could start with the match in Columbus. And Columbus has only won one more match than you. And they played one less game. You played one more game than they have if you're an Atlanta United fan. Columbus has only won one more match. And there are times when, let's look at Columbus's last five real quick. 1-1 draw with Colorado, 3-2 win with New York City, lost to Montreal 2-1, goalless draw with the Revs, 2-0 win in Hell is Real. That's the last five. So once again, you don't really know which Columbus team you're going to get, but Cucho and Lucas Zelarayán, fantastic combo that you've really got to account for the entire 90 minutes. So like I said, I'm looking at, and like I said, this is just me, but I look at the right-hand side of the ledger, 5 points out of a playoff spot, and take care of your business that way. Also looking at what folks are looking at this morning, back to the philosophical discussion, and Alex Pacine, don't care about the VAR call. It was 50-50, probably shouldn't have been overturned, but could have just as easily been called on to start. Not even worth thinking about. The problem is how clinical other teams are against us versus needing 1,000 chances to convert. Numbers speak for themselves. It's not against the run of play when it is the plan all along. Let's see. A lot of folks are going back and forth with conversation with themselves, and that's very cool. Thank you guys for doing that and having the conversations with each other that are part of all of this. And it's great to have all of this stuff. So going through everything else, Alex Pacine, correct. The AR was Marietta's own Corey Rockwell. And Abby, to the point on goal number two, that Klamala says it may have been different if he did not try and head the ball. That may very well have been the case. But I would also think that Rocco Rios Novo with basically, if I'm Rocco and the ball and Klamala raises up in front of me and above me, I'm still trying to figure out where the ball is. Then I would think that Rocco could have a better gauge to grab the ball from Tolkien's free kick and sit there and grab it. So I would think that that would be something that Rocco could grab onto. If he'd had the lock in and to sit there and go, what's going on? Sheath says, I guess I'm one of the few, or maybe the only person that felt Moreno's back leg kept the attacker onside. That's what the decision was based on. I mean, like I said, Sheath, when I looked at it, I think we all had the same four angles, whether you were in the building or watching on TV or wherever. But if we all had the same four cameras, I don't have an angle that gave it to me. I really don't. I don't have an angle that gave me the particular play. So, that's where I'm looking at it from my perspective. And the whole thing that we got into this morning, 3.5 minutes to decide a clear and obvious error. That to me is entirely too long. And then Bam had mentioned, you know, keep it to a minute on the clock. And if you can't figure it out, then you're done. You know, that might be the way to go. But put a time clock on it. But yeah, 3.5 minutes to determine something. When you know, when the VAR calls the center ref to the monitor, you know that it's probably going to be reversed. But the fact that it took as long as it did to reverse it, that's the other element in all of this for me that that we attach ourselves to. Let's see. Michael Head, Atlanta is a sum. The sum is less than its parts. Bad roster construction and lately bad coaching and performance. I know that, Michael, you and I will probably talk offline about that, considering our geographic proximity. And it will end up being a pretty long conversation. Would like to know from your perspective, just when you say it's bad roster construction, what's bad? What's bad about it? And that's the thing. It's like, I know that we all like to do details. You know, we always like to do a sentence, two or three or here. But like I said, what I would like to posit and pose going forward is adding depth to the discussion. If I could get my upper plate to work, adding depth to the discussion. That's what I would, you know, that's what I'd like to add on to here. When you say bad roster construction, bad coaching and performance, okay, bad coaching and performance, that we can understand. But when you say bad roster construction, you and I can talk about it offline. I know that. But for those of us here in the Twitch pitch specifically, what would you be referring to when you're looking at bad roster construction? So that way we can continue the conversation that way. Abby. Should have won the game, didn't score. Waiting for the perfect shot is killing me. There are times when there's a shot beyond the 18, just shoot and keep following the ball to possibly get any rebounds. We have the ability, not taking the chances and waiting for the perfect shot. And many times I see our players just watching the ball, not going to space. Five stripe, congrats to Joseph. Well-deserved on the 100th goal. Still the king. We can't have Joseph be a DP moving forward, in my opinion. Love him forever. There is something missing, not smart enough to know what. And I think that... you know, five stripe, we got into the discussion where, you know, once again, Joseph, after the initial knee surgery and then the subsequent surgery, you know, he's still trying to get back to full song. And this version of Joseph is going to be different from the pre-injury version of Joseph. That's just how things are. And so, you know, you figure out how to adjust. If you're Joseph, you figure out how to adjust your game and what you can and can't do going forward. So that's, you know, where we are, I guess, with Joseph Martinez. Tom, once again, the three things I was wrong about: Arruju would be an MVP candidate, offense would carry the defense once healthy, and Pineda was a great hire. And I know that that Tom, you and I will continue to have those conversations as well. Michael Head, let's face it, we're 13th. That's who we are. We'd be relegated anywhere else in the world. But actually, it would be D.C., Sporting, and San Jose, Houston, and then Atlanta. So, you know, I guess Michael, something Southampton-ish, maybe, right now, if you're looking for that kind of a parallel. Also, a lot of compliments for Bart and having him on. Like I said, Bart opened this window. He volunteered. So maybe Bart turns into Thursdays at 9:30. So, you know, that's where we are. Michael asking about Pineda and wanting to know about tactics. And once again, I will go back to, you know, the comments, the points that we've been making all season long. It's like, yes, you know, you're having to deal with injuries and all these kinds of things. You're not having the players that you were looking for. I mean, out of the blocks, you don't have Brad Guzan. You lose Ozzie Alonso. You don't have Santi Sosa. And, you know, that spine disappears and you've got to figure out what to do. Then you lose Andrew Gutman. You're bringing in Caleb Wiley. You lose Brooks Lennon. You're having to work in Aiden McFadden. And so it's levels of experience that are being paired with what you're trying to do. And you're trying to do this as well as you can with all of these moving parts and skill sets and things like that. And so it's been a challenge for Pineda and the coaching staff this season to get results and to have, you know, starting 11s and 18s, you know, where you're not, you know, having to call up Atlanta United 2 and Jack Collison day or two before a match and bring folks up and have them as a part of the roster. So now, like I said, Michael, you and I are probably going to have a very long discussion offline about all this stuff. Abby on Santi Sosa. Santi works his ass off and the players in front of him not producing. Yeah, Grant looks like he was looking at the match and was breaking some of the things down when it comes to activity in the match in and of itself. So it looks like Grant was watching the first half of the board. Let's see. Once again, a lot of compliments for Bart. And I'm glad we had Bart on this morning. So very, very cool that Bart could bring out some time and be here with us this morning. And, you know, Alex, I know that game state would be different. You don't know if Joseph scores, if the situation is different. But, you know, like I said, I'm taking the match at face value and extrapolating that point. And that was where that came in with that particular argument. But my larger point in all of this has to go back to what we were discussing with all of these elements. And you know, it was a big point that we got into with Bart. Once again, the discussion about Patrick Klamala jumping up in front of Rocco Rios Novo and calls and all these kinds of things. So, it is incredibly frustrating. And it's almost like, you know, something else and then something else pops up, something else pops up and all these kinds of things. So, the year has been frustrating across the board. If you're a fan or a follower or a supporter of Atlanta United, no doubt about it, a bunch of different reasons that have led to it all. And so, so that's kind of where we are. Turner, in discussing Pulisic and all of that, says at least Barca spends money, even if it's monopoly money. Next time Bart is on, we'll ask him about this, about the front line in Qatar being Weah Ferreira and Aronson with Pulisic and Gio as monsters off the bench. So we'll ask about that next time. And yeah, Emilio, yeah, I know Charlotte's ahead with the better roster. And Abby, once again, we know roster isn't everything. It's who plays with who and the chemistry. Hoping the new incoming president's a motivator as well, whomever that person is. Kefsey talking about season tickets with the discussion there. Still haven't met anyone who said they won't renew. I'm sure there are, but I'm glad I'll see familiar faces through 23. Also, you have Shooter. A brutal season for you guys. Just fire the coach and that'll solve it. No, it won't. I don't know if you're saying that somewhat tongue in cheek or not. It will not solve the problem if you just fire the coach. No, injuries can't explain our inability to score goals currently, but it, with the idea of chemistry and working relationships, I think it can be a contributing discussion point to it. Because if, you know, you don't have the guys up front and they're not, you know, working together, it's all about that rhythm and all about, you know, trying to figure out, okay, if the innate ability of understanding where someone's going to be and not having to think about it. And I think a lot of times you look at what Atlanta United is trying to do offensively, and it's almost like they're thinking too much, and you can see them thinking instead of just doing. And I think that that's part of it. But I know that they've had plenty of time to build chemistry, but once again, it's with players who are in and out and all these kinds of things. Yeah, you can build chemistry, but once again, consistency of play and consistency of players, I think, helps build chemistry just as much, if not more. So that's where I was going with all of that. So you had to bring in Ronaldo Cisneros to help you out because of the injuries up top. You had to bring in Juanjo Purata to help you out at the back. And you have a front office that's still trying to figure out, with all of these absences, who we can bring in with the roster, with the cap constraints and the league financial constraints that we have. And you're trying to create chemistry on the fly. And it's an incredibly difficult thing to do. Next season, according to, Emilio, yeah, we won't have Guzan and Miles to start, but at least they will be closer and you will have had seasons. You will have had an entire season with guys like George Campbell and with Caleb Wiley on your back line to help you out. And you'll have Andrew Gutman healthy, Brooks Lennon healthy. So you won't be as reliant on those younger players from absolute jump. And so that's something to look forward to next year. And the mini series or the docuseries with Brad and his rehab is now out with Atlanta United. And we've seen Miles actually do some light work with activity on mats, I believe. And so it's always good stuff. So let's see, Emilio, LAFC just seems to add players, don't seem to miss a beat. But right now I think that, Emilio, where LAFC is concerned, I would still maintain that if you can be physical with, LAFC and knock them off their pins and frustrate them, then I think that you can really get to LAFC. And until LAFC learns how to deal with physical teams in the West, which by nature, they all want to trade blows with each other. But I think that if you get a physical team that can kind of frustrate LAFC, I don't think they know how to handle that. And I think that the team that does that in the West, I think that will be the one that sets the bar for LAFC in the West. And I know that for John Thorington and for LAFC, it's win now. It is absolutely win now. Bale, Chiellini, Vela, all those guys. You sign them to 18-month contracts with AM and promises and things like that, Chicho Arango. But yeah, for LAFC, it's win now. You want to be the shiny object in town, and you want to be there. You want to be there better than LAFC. So let's see. And Uncle Lee, I'll take their issues over ours any day. Amelia, what about scoring next year? That has to be addressed. You look at, once again, I think that Joseph Martinez and how he continues to rehab and get as close to full song and how he integrates. I think that that's part and parcel to it. And having, talents like, Thiago Almada and Aruju, and once again, getting them all together for an entire season from the beginning, from a training camp perspective, working forward, I think that that'll be big. Yeah. And you'll and Uncle will take LAFC's issues over ours any day. But let me check real quick and see if folks have, dove back in on Twitters. Colonel enjoyed the interview with Bart, referee decision and discussion notwithstanding, meaningful questions, responses direct to the point and spot on accurate. So I think that what you guys are saying is you want Bart back on Thursdays. Absolutely no issue with that. So the biggest thing is going to be, Bart, do you want to come back? That's the big part with Bart. So it was good to have Bart on this morning. Jarrett will be back tomorrow, and we will discuss the weekend whip around and all the issues. Nico Moreno, once again, will be with us later today on tape, and we will be able to roll through everything. So I want to thank everybody for hanging out on a daily basis, like we always do. Love the discussions that we have, because that's why we're here, to have this back and forth and talk through things and you know, have an honest discourse. And that's what I love doing every single day. And you know, as we continue to go forward here at 905, biggest thing is just let's keep doing this. Let's keep adding depth and you know, keep talking about all the things that we talk about. So once again, thanks to everybody here once again joining today. Tomorrow's the weekend whip around, and we'll get you ready for a very, very busy weekend in Major League Soccer across the board. I know that the y'all, it was disappointing last night, no question, because the opportunity was there to get full points at home and you didn't get it. So match in hand is wiped away and you're chasing now, and you've got to get a result in Columbus. You've got to steal points in Columbus. 5 points out of a playoff spot, 9 matches to go, and that's where we are. So we'll take it a match at a time, a day at a time here at SDH. And thanks for everybody for hanging out with us, and I mean that in the collective. Thanks for hanging out with all of you, and thanks to all of you for hanging out with me and Bart and everybody here at SDH. So for Jarrett, Nick, John, and Jason, so who's fighting long COVID. It's very, 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 it's a big bear that he's got to fight every single day. So be good, y'all. Play it safe, and we will do it again mañana. We got high school football to talk about, too. We'll talk about a lot of stuff tomorrow here on SDH. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your day, and be good, and we will catch up with you very soon. So here's the end of the show.